2. The doctor's staff had been very firm on the point that, following the procedure, he would be unfit to drive because of the powerful drugs they were going to give him, that he would, for all practical purposes, be an ambulatory basket case, and that they wouldn't even begin the procedure unless he had a designated minder who would sign him out afterward and take responsibility for keeping him away from heavy machinery. Accordingly, Richard now walked 2 blocks to a transit stop, boarded a city bus that would take him to the medical complex on the hill above downtown, and made himself comfortable in a seat amidships. He woke up his phone. Its home screen was chicken-poxed with little red dots with accusatory numbers in them, the consequences of having turned a deaf ear to the din for 12 whole hours. He willed himself not to see those, and instead brought up his address book. He scrolled to the K section and found 5 different entries for Corvallis Kawasaki. Some of them had little pictures attached to them, which helped Richard guess how out of date they were. Most had accumulated during the years that Corvallis had worked hand in glove with Richard at Corporation 9592, the game company that had made Richard a billionaire, and Corvallis, in the lexicon of the tech business world, a decimillionaire. The pictures on those tended to show him hoisting pints in bars or in various funny, celebratory poses connected with the company's rise to prominence in the online gaming industry. One of them, however, was a very straight, formal headshot of Corvallis with his hair neatly trimmed and gelled, wearing a suit and tie. This card, which was only a few months old, identified him as the CTO of Nubilant Industries, a company that did cloud computing. It had been formed last year as part of a roll-up, which was TechBiz parlance for acquiring and combining several companies that were all operating in the same space. Corvallis had been induced, by means of a hefty stock option grant, to leave his position at Corporation 9592 and join the new company. Richard had been sorry to see him go, but he had to admit that it was an excellent fit. Corvallis had overseen the shift of all Corporation 9592's operations from old-fashioned server racks to the cloud, and he hadn't been as lavishly compensated as others who had been luckier in their timing. Since Corvallis's departure to Nubilant, which was headquartered near downtown Seattle, he and Richard had exchanged texts on several occasions trying to find time to meet up for a drink. So far, it had not come together. But when Dodge pulled up his Corvallis text message stream, he found at its tail a flurry of messages from over the preceding weekend, in which Corvallis agreed to take the afternoon off and serve as Richard's designated minder, collecting him from the clinic in his narcotic haze and taking him to lunch or something as he returned to his senses. OMW to clinic, Richard thumbed. Then he fetched a substantial pair of headphones from his bag and placed them over his ears. The sounds of the bus were muted. He plugged the cord into the phone and turned the headphones on. For these were electronic noise-canceling headphones. Directly they began to feed anti-noise into his ears, making everything quieter yet. Corvallis texted back, K. The phone displayed the ellipsis indicating that he was still typing. Dodge activated the music player app and began scrolling through his playlists, looking for the P section. His tinnitus was ramping up because of the unearthly quiet produced by the noise-canceling feature. Corvallis added, "If you are feeling up to it, I will take you by the office. Would like to show you what we are up to. Cool stuff." Richard decided not to respond to that one. As much as he liked Corvallis, he dreaded going on tours of high-tech companies. He tapped the words, "Pompatus Bombasticus." The lavish tonalities of a full symphony orchestra, backed up by a choir and fortified by a driving modern percussion section, filled his ears. Pompatus Bombasticus was Richard's favorite group. Apparently it was just one guy working alone in a studio in Germany. The Philharmonic, the choir, and all the rest were faked with synthesizers. This guy had noticed some years ago that all inexpensive horror movies use the same piece of music, Karl Orff's Carmina Burana, in their soundtracks. That opus had become a cliché, more apt to induce groans or laughs than horror. This German, who had been living the starving artist lifestyle while trying to establish a career as a DJ, had been struck by an insight that had transformed his career. The filmmakers of the world were manifesting an insatiable demand for a type of music of which Carmina Burana was the only existing specimen. The market, if the world of composers and musicians could be thought of as such,